than 12 minutes and two sentences is also okay, to inquire into their experience with this book. And we'll end this part of the evening in this room with a short musical and poetry intermezzo by Sandra and Noon. So, Kitty, I would like to ask you, Professor Kitty Zijlmans, to take the stage and introduce us into the subject of tonight.
This one works, yeah? Can everyone hear me properly?
Yes.
That's good. Oops. Just leave it here. I brought my own copy of the book because this book, with its very kind, lovely words by Caroline, testifies of our collaboration. Not that I had many effort in producing the book, but I served as a sort of first reader, enjoyed reading, but far more even the discussion with Caroline relating to the topic of the book. Witnessing you... Is it too close or not close enough? Not close enough. It sounds a bit like the Bingy film Downstairs, where you also have this beautiful audio. Okay, I must be very audible now. witnessing you on trust and truth in a networked world. 13 artists present their research on how we negotiate trust and truth in a networked world. When I read this title and also, of course, the contents of the book, I thought there are many concepts in here. There's the whole idea of witnessing. It may not be too obvious for you, but we are at present monitored on CCTV over there in the corners of the room. And if you sit downstairs, you can actually almost see who is here. We are so used to it that we don't even pay attention anymore. But it's everywhere, so we are being seen, we are watched, and we watch each other. Another important, and it's highlighted, is the you, so everyone is addressed. It's not just a couple of people. You is everyone related, or everyone not related, everyone. Trust, something you give and something you have, perhaps. And I hope everyone has trust and also gives trust. Truth, that's more difficult, because whose truth is here at stake? Then, of course, we have the artists. We already know that they are sitting over there. Then negotiate. What is negotiation? How does that go? How is the process of negotiation? And, of course, last but not least, the networked world. When I read and thought about witnessing and truth, it brought to mind, maybe also to you, the famous film Rashomon by the Japanese filmmaker Akira Kurosawa from 1950. It's a tale, it plays in ancient Japan, where a woman is raped and her husband killed. The film gives us four viewpoints of the incident, of this brutal murder, I would say. One for each defendant, each revealing a little more detail. Which version, if any, is the real truth about what happened? We never know. There is not one truth. Another kind of truth. Greenaway's film, another film, The Cook, the Thief, His Wife, and Her Lover. The wife asks the cook, after the murder on her lover, who was killed by her husband, the thief, if he, and that's the cook, had seen them together. Otherwise, it wouldn't be true. If no one would have seen them, if no one could act as witness of their love, actually stating that they were lovers, was it then true? In the book, these questions are related to artworks, practices of art of 13 artists. And what is referred to as artistic research is what I would briefly like to introduce, or at least contemplate a bit, because if there is one thing complicated and much discussed at present, it's what is artistic research. It has a multitude of descriptions, interpretations, and in my opinion, it's the fastest growing disciplinary field. And then immediately, of course, the question arises, is it a discipline? I see it as follows, and that comes also from the point of view of academia in which I work. I see it as the fourth large field to, next to and equivalent of the large research fields, as we know within academia, the sciences and the natural sciences, the social sciences and the humanities. For me, artistic research is the fourth field, the fourth one. Practice-based research, art research, research in art, there's so many equivalents, but it fits, it's one large new field, and there's no one fitting, not one fitting definition. One can say all art is based on research, the materials, the subject matter, the design, the context, etc., etc. Some artists focus solely on their materials, others explore every topic imaginable. For instance, I would like to refer to Martin Kemp, who's a colleague, an art historian, who wrote a series of articles in Nature. And Nature is the world's leading journal for announcement of scientific discoveries. And he wrote articles on art and artistic discoveries from 1997 until 2000. So he wrote about their discoveries, their research, exploring the cosmos and microcosms. The human body, for instance, Leonardo da Vinci or Vesalius. Space, perspective, for instance, Piero della Francesca, Alberti, Saint Redan, many, many more. The animal world, sight and seeing, meteorology, radiation, x-rays, radio waves, physiognomy, human expression and facial features, mathematics, space-time relations, color, holism, ecology, matters of identity, self and the other, the environment, the list can go on indefinitely. All these subjects are touched upon by artists. It is research from art. It is artists that research these things. Is then all art artistic research? And if not, what is new about artistic research with two capitals? It's not so much the fact itself, I would say, that artists explore, but how the field, how this endeavor is seen as research, not as subordinate to academic research, but as its counterpart, and in exchange and collaboration with the field of academic research, as well as, of course, societal contexts. If seen in this context, what then is artistic research? There is a growing number of MAs, artistic research in the Netherlands, as well as on a PhD level. There is a great variety international. In other countries, there are arts doctorates, which are not precisely the same as PhDs. To give you one example, I have an experience I had in the UK, in Middlesex University, where they actually have three forms of doctorates, three forms of art doctorates. One is, let's say, the PhD we know from the Netherlands, where someone does academic research and gets his PhD when successful. The other one is when a large part of the work is the writing and a lesser part is the artwork, but it's the relationship in between the two, when a PhD is bestowed. And the third one we do not know in the Netherlands. It's called an art doctorate, and it's actually 80% is the artwork, and 20% is a sort of a review or comment on the process of the artwork itself, on the research. So you become doctor, but not with a PhD, but with an arts doctorate. Many other countries know that as well, that distinction. We do not have it here in the Netherlands. Only the universities have what we call the jus promovendi, the right to bestow or to award a PhD. If that will change, I don't know. We'll see. It would be fine with me. That's another thing. But this is happening at the moment. There is a growing corpus of books and studies in artistic research, too many to list, but with authors such as James Elkins, for instance. There is academic reflection on what might be called artistic research. For instance, the PhD written by Henk Borgdorf, who was awarded a PhD in Leiden. That's why I'm highlighting him, because he was doing that with me. I'm very proud of him. The conflict of the faculty's perspective on artistic research and academia. There is an online, a very recent online journal on artistic research called JAR, and it also has an open access artist research catalog. There is, of course, a wiki, Because what do? You first go to, you Google, and then you find a wiki, and it says, and I quote, "The primary purposes of basic research, as opposed to applied research, are documentation, discovery, interpretation, or the research and development of methods and systems for the advancement of human knowledge. Approaches to research depend on epistemologies, which vary considerably both within and between humanities and sciences." I wonder if the artists recognize themselves. "Artistic research, also seen as practice-based research, can take form when creative works are considered both the research and the object of research itself. It is the debatable body of thought which offers an alternative to purely scientific methods in research, in its search for knowledge and truth." There the truth comes again. "There is an online artistic research bibliography. It has an overview of conferences and publications. It's huge, and it's growing every day. So this artistic research is a vast, and I say it again, perhaps the fastest growing field of knowledge production. And it needs attention and evaluation, because I think it brings back art where it should be, and that is seen as a serious field of the production of knowing, maybe more than knowledge. It's always difficult to pinpoint your finger to it. It's a particular research, a particular acknowledgement of art, I think, as essential for us being human. And to get some foothold myself, thinking about how can I typify or define or get a grip on artistic research, I've introduced for myself, published it somewhere, the metaphor of the knight's move. And the knight is from chess. And it is to refer how I see artistic research as an oblique way of looking at and studying the world. The knight's move, het paard, even voor het gemak, it's an odd move, not known in any other game. In diagonal jumps, the knight moves simultaneously, horizontally, and vertically over the board. Also, he can jump over all the other pieces. The knight and his moves are paramount for the game. He should always be close to where the action is. See the metaphor of where I position art and artists. Pieces are in general more powerful if placed near the center of the board, so the explanation goes. But this is particularly true of the knight. The knight is the only piece that can move at the beginning of the game before any pawn move has been made. All in all, it's an important piece. And for me, its actions stand for the importance of art for our world, both the artworks and the way an artist conducts his research or her research. After all, in contrast to academic scholars, who are part of a disciplinary or interdisciplinary discourse, the artist encounters less scholarly constraints and can move more freely in between artistic and academic expertise. I supervise 4 artists myself in Leiden, at Leiden University, in pursuing their PhD. And that is in the context of the PhD Darts trajectory in Leiden. It's a collaboration between Leiden University Academy of Creative and Performing Arts, one of the institutes of the Faculty of Humanities, and the Royal Academy of Art in Den Haag, the KABK. Why is it important? I think it's the first place where in the Netherlands artists can do a PhD on their artistic research, on their art, not on something outside of art, because everyone can write a dissertation if they like, but this is about the research of the artist, his own or her own work itself. The outcome of research in art, another phrase, is open, and this openness is a condition for conducting research in art and design, otherwise you would already know what the outcome would be. But of course there are conditions. It should be independent artist researcher work. He or she should be competent to achieve an artistic research or outcome established on the basis of an interaction between an artistic development and by the artist conducted research. So it's an to and fro all the time between research and artistic production, or the two mingle. in combination with a review on the conducted research. And that shows a synergy. The synergy is really what should be most present. How has the artist conducted the research in a unique connection between the work and certain research questions that have been posed? What are the experiments that have been carried out? What is the artistry of the research project? What are the newly acquired knowledge and insights? Not just the work of the maker, but also in a larger frame of, let's say, the discipline of artistic research. What is the contribution, the unique contribution of the work? This is the Leiden way. There are other ways. There's a lot of variety worldwide. One thing I know for sure, it's here to stay. Artistic research as an acknowledged field of knowledge, of knowing, of getting access to the world. Why is it so important? I think to get acquainted with oblique ways of looking at the world, to see and experience the world in a different way. Present day's world is changing rapidly. Maybe it always did. But what is happening now is specifically this digital technology that has opened up unknown vistas until now. And I would like to go back to the book and quote one sentence, which I think is, there are very many important sentences, but this I would like to highlight, because the key question of this whole endeavor was, related to artistic research, how to design systems so human beings can participate and accept responsibility for their actions. And the question then is how artists show and intervene in these kind of systems, give their own ways and oblique ways of looking at connectivities, of witnessing and also bearing witness of what we, of in fact a human presence. What I would like to end with is that witnessing you is actually referring to witnessed reflection, and that is what we will come to learn in 13 different ways, hopefully as a shared reflection with the interview Anne is now going to perform with the artists. Thank you for your attention.
Thank you very much, Kitty. I was stuck in our analog floor. Thank you for introducing us into the framework from which this book was born, the framework of artistic research. In order to clarify that framework, I should also maybe draw your attention to how the book came into being. The research took place in the context of the Participatory Systems Initiative of the TU Delft, which is chaired by Francis Brazier. It was also part of the research into mediating presence of the European Institute of Technology. And in November, artists of Witnessing You participated in workshops with EIT scientists exploring the new paradigm of participation. The artistic research was made possible by the special funding scheme, well, the former funding scheme of BKVB Live, unfortunately no longer here nor there, which explicitly allowed for experiments. With MediaMathic Lab and the first artist, a special format is developed for the artistic research. Artists made autonomous work and publish reflections on this work in the site beinghere.net. This site uses the social network software Animeta, and you have to forgive me my pronunciation, I'm a digital analphabet, as Willem Veldhoven from MediaMathic can probably testify, but is designed along the guidelines of a classical essay and allows to see the work of an author slash artist in its own right and in relation to other authors as well. That's actually the formal network from which I'm really struggling with this microphone. Apologize, I'm going to rip it from. This is better, I'm sorry. This is the formal context from which this book and the website and the research was born. The book was not only the product of a system, it was also a product of human relationships, a relationship between all the artists present and Karine Nevian, between different participants that are listed in the introduction and thanked in the introduction, like Suzanne Oxenaar, who was invaluable for her artistic advice, family of Karine Nevian, who were invaluable for their emotional support, but especially also the book was a collaboration in many forms and multifaceted ways between Caroline and her dear partner, Lane de Baat. And he's thanked, and this book is dedicated to him. So I have never met him, I wish I had, but this book is also a labor of love. So I hope that you take it home, you buy it, and you read it contents, but also realize that apart from being systematic research, this was also a systematic collaboration on an emotional level. And it's very difficult to go on from there, but I wanted to mention it because I think it's important that we're not looking just at an academic framework tonight, but looking at much more than that, especially because the topic of the book deals, in a way, for me at least, with human relationships. The aim and the target of the research was to explore how we negotiate truth and trust in a network world. And in order to prepare myself for that, as I said, I'm a digital analphabet. This is an analog space. You're surrounded by analog prints of an analog photographer. This is the non-digital world. I wanted to venture more deeply into the digital world that I am not familiar with. And I came across an article already maybe outdated by Claire Bishop. She's a professor at the CUNY Graduate Art Center in New York, called The Digital Divide. Maybe some of you have read it. It's a quite personal essay in which she makes a number of claims. She says, namely, that there's a big rift between the world of new media art and the mainstream art world. And she also claims, and that was something that a lot of people responded to, she states that she has the sense that the appearance and content of contemporary art have been curiously unresponsive to the total upheaval in our labor and leisure inaugurated by the digital revolution. So she basically claims many artists use digital technology, but not many really think about what this means for us. They don't really confront the question of what it means to think, see, and filter through the digital. Curiously enough, in the mainstream art world, there's a kind of fetishization of analog media, 16mm projectors, 35mm projectors, analog photo prints. She said, it seems like the contemporary art world has not tapped into what it means to live in a fully digitized world. My first thing tomorrow will be to send this book to Claire Bishop to maybe not prove the opposite, but provide another angle. But her view on the topic really made me wonder, because some of the artists, I think, in the room and who are part of the book are maybe digital analphabets as well, or at least do not explore digital technology in their work. And I was very curious, for example, Ronald, how the basic question I had to every artist tonight was, we live at least in Dutch society, where the meaning of contemporary art is increasingly under pressure, where the role of the artist is thoroughly questioned. And I was wondering, in the book you describe how this process of being part of Caroline's research has affected your own work, but I was wondering, has it affected your view of what your role and function of an artist is? And it's a big question, but you all received it by email beforehand. So this doesn't come as a total surprise. May I ask you, Ronald, to formulate a brief or long response?
I'll start with a brief one. What I learned from this project is to put some things in words, and that the arts are, in a way, trained to develop strategies to make someone a moved witness. So we all are witness, everybody. But to be a moved witness, that needs something else. So that means that we have to dramatize the information that comes to us. And I think that's one, for me, that was one of the most important conclusions after being part of this process. And I think we also can share our strategies. And the importance to be a moved witness is, of course, to feel more. And if we feel more, the urge to judge comes up. And when we start to judge, we take action. And we need action, of course, to develop society. And if that's in an analog world or in a digital world, in a way, that doesn't matter.
Does this mean that you... Oh my God. We should have done this without microphones. Does this mean that you will use the techniques and methodologies that you learned through the project in mediating your own work, or was this a one-time experiment?
No, it would be great if it was more than a one-time experiment. We did it at Delft, so we had a workshop at the university, and that workshop was quite interesting. It was about the mediated courtroom, and mediated courtroom. There were other workshops also on other subjects, but I was part of this mediated courtroom. And a mediated courtroom means that the witness, the one who's going to be prosecuted, is not anymore in the courtroom. He stays in jail, or she stays in jail. So the interview goes by video, and it happens in a few countries, in England, for instance, in Sweden, in America, because it's sometimes too dangerous to move the victims, or it's cheaper anyway. But you lose everything, I think. You know, even if a judge sends someone for years to jail, that should be, in a way, a dramatic exit.
Martin, you're much more familiar with these tools and technologies. Has the project in any way altered your perception of your own? I always hesitate to say function as an artist, because I don't believe that artists have a function, but in your own role or position as an artist or cultural producer?
Yeah. I mean, for myself, it was the first experience I had to really have to reflect upon my work. My work is quite diverse in many different fields. And the project really learned me how to kind of decipher which tools I use to make things happen. Like what strategies I use, or what tools that I use would then can actually also be applied for other people in a very simple way.
And do you believe, I mean, I was going to ask the same question to anyone, but I think that's maybe boring. We'll improvise some more. Do you believe that the digital divide that Claire Bishop talks about, the division between new media art and mainstream contemporary art, is a valid one? Because she not only claims that there's this divide, but definitely that there's also a divide between how artists use digital technology and how it's used in the rest of the world by everyday users, by consumers and prosumers.
I think they're just all communication tools. You know, I think that you have analog communication, you have digital communication, but what you strive for is finding just communication with each other. That's what you do, you try to tell a story, to tell an idea, to criticize, to play, to create, but it's really about how do you, I think the goal as artist is really about trying to know how you want to share. That's what you do it. And whatever tool you can do that to make that sharing happen, that's important.
I'm going to move to the other side and then come back. Otherwise, it becomes maybe a little bit too static. Zoro, I mean, not to be offensive, but I will also categorize you as an artist working with more traditional materials. What has this meant for you, or what has this meant reflecting on your own position?
I use a lot of digital means, but I try to make them very much not visible in the end result. And I think they're also not really relevant, but indeed, as Martin said, they're tools. And I think the part of reflecting on your own work, but also putting it in this network and making all these cross-references, is like putting your work in this room and tying strings between every work and labeling all these strings with meanings. And I think that was the most interesting part of the experience.
So you also mean that this research project and what it has created also opened up, well, didn't open up the world of your work, but maybe opened up the world where you could put your work in? Or is that too cryptic? I mean, like, is it really just a tool?
No, well, it's an addition to everything that was already there. There is a book, but now there is also a sort of a whole network that's created through this website, and that links all these different meanings and different parts of this book together, and it's not just a linear story anymore.
Thank you. I see Karen has prepared on the iPad, so I have to go to her first. And I think you have prepared my very blunt question, but I think it's an intriguing one. If this project has, you already work in the public realm? I mean, you're not the kind of artist who works from her studio and then puts her output in the white cube, but has this way of working, this methodology, affected the way you view yourself?
Yeah, I took your question as an invitation to make a statement about research and public space. So it will be a few minutes. Yeah. In less than 5 minutes. I want to start with saying that I collaborate with Herman Maat, who is there in the audience. We are working as an artist duo. There he is.
With a white sweater.
Yes. Okay. Okay, first of all, we think all artists are researchers. The Being Here project gives artistic research a clear position in society. With this, Caroline Evian creates a central position for the role of the artist as researcher, producer of experiments and innovative prototypes. To facilitate a reflective zone for our social, economical and scientific communities' discourse. This ongoing discourse about our society is vital and the reason why we make ourselves useful with this microphone. So what is our role as researchers? Our research is staged in the urban public space, the art world, and within social and technical sciences. We research possibilities for a sensitive social public space, which is increasingly interwoven with social technologies, digital technologies. In a public space that consists increasingly of a mediated public. As William Mitchell states, I am part of the networks, and the networks are part of me, I link, therefore I am. So the analog makes us link in connection with all our mobile phones we have here. We're not only here with the ones we can see here, but we are at the same time connected with all the other people that are in our mobile phones and are SMSing you right now. We research existing social technological systems, question these rules, deconstruct them, and make new experimental constructions and test them with our audience. Actually, our whole body of work can be seen as research. As artistic researchers, we invite our audience as co-researchers in our artistic social labs. For these artistic social labs, we design seductive and visual interactive performances and installations which function as meeting places, in which we present in public spaces like squares, musea, train stations, internationally in various social cultures of China, Europe, US, Middle East. And we find this interesting because in the public space, the way we experience each other is different in different public spaces throughout the world. And we ask our audience questions like, how do we trust each other online? Do you need to see my eyes? Or do we need to touch each other? How do we experience each other and trust each other as networking bodies? Now, these are really simple questions, and we like to make these simple questions because you feel, oh, I can answer that question. That's a simple one. And then once you start answering the question, it appears to you that it's actually a really difficult question, and the answer will never be a definite answer. So these are questions that are producing new questions. And in this way, we like to invite an audience for the vital and creative act of research. And in this way, you can invite the audience in a social sculpture.
An email pops up.
No. Yeah, yeah, it's another friend. And and now the whole thing disappears for a moment. There it is. Okay. Through these questions, we research experience and forms of subjective engagement for which we do not have yet words. We invite your audience to experiment and play with social technologies and to reflect on their perception of the city, their experience of body, their presence on trust, identity, and community, and to share experience of mediated embodied relations, telepresent forms of touching and seeing, mediated forms of meeting. And we collect these audience reactions in databases, expose them live in the artworks, in the art space, and in this way, they become part of a public dialogue. And this audience interaction in the social lab shows social portraits of urban mediated life. Now, we work since 15 years on these experiment social systems and innovative social processes, embodied, sensitive, intuitive, and reciprocal processes. As artists, we can pioneer. We don't have to implement them as products in a technological world. We can pioneer, make prototypes, intuitive, not market directed. And we collaborate internationally with museums, universities, city councils, experimental technology labs, and artists in residencies. At the Technical University of Delft, Caroline Nevian and Francis Brazier recognize our artistic knowledge, and they have asked us to describe and visualize our tacit knowledge and public experiences in a PhD, and to design parameters for a future participatory public space, to create performative and spatial models accessible to a larger economical and scientific community. We create this PhD within the Participatory Systems Initiative, including artists and designers, of whom some are here tonight. So what about the use of artistic research in our contemporary society? We claim artworks and artistic research is useful because of the reflective zone it creates. We research experience of presence and trust in our mediated society. The university uses our artistic knowledge and audience experience and asks us to create new parameters for future technology for social well-being. We see ourselves as artistic experimental innovators.
Thank you. Thank you, Karen. That almost read like a manifesto. I think you have to republish it so that we can all really digest it and access it. I wanted to move to the other side, but that is now going to seem very artificial. So I wanted to ask Afaina, how you look upon the impact of this research coming from a more applied field like architecture. Maybe this was a less strange encounter. Maybe this was a more familiar process for you.
Well, I guess because my background is in architecture, I'm very used to kind of start off with doing research. So I mean, the first years of my professional life, I spent in think tanks and doing research, field research. So I thought it was interesting because it's a very conscious thing then, you know, you start off with this thing that you found and you try to make something out of that notion. But then what I know also whilst creating, it becomes very intuitive, you know, I mean, I just go with the flow sometimes. Something comes onto your path or you have certain tools to your disposal. So then it becomes fluffy again, and there the creation happens for me. And what I thought was interesting while participating in the project is, so it's conscious, then it becomes subconscious again, and then I had to go back and kind of, okay, so what did I do actually, you know? And through the website, I kind of rediscovered new elements that I didn't even know I kind of were using at the time. So I thought that was really cool. Also in kind of experiencing space, it's something that I of course do. Yeah, I see a space and I kind of filter it through my senses. But then it's kind of like what sensation comes out of that and how can I capture that and translate it back to people. So that really helped.
So it enabled you to have an insight into your own creative process, but also to share that process with a larger amount of people rather than just the outcome.
Yeah.
One of the weird things of being constantly online is that you meet people online but not physical. So I think that this is Deborah, but I'm not sure because we never really had a conversation. Am I correct?
That's correct.
Luckily, this could have been very embarrassing. But Deborah, I had... Not only I thought that your entries on the website were extremely interesting, but also engaging and funny. You seem to be one of the artists who also introduced a kind of very playful angle into your contribution. Is that something that you think is also particular to the medium? I mean, does this kind of technology allow for seriousness combined with maybe a light touch?
Well, I think that any medium, any tool, any context can be playful or stiff and horrible as much as you like. And I had the opportunity when I was, I have in my practice come from working very much online, almost exclusively online, and now the work that I do, also with the people with whom I collaborate, is the digital, say, what we mean by digital networked context is almost, is very small and not an important part of the work. But the work, the context of creating and working with community and being playful is really important because we, and I collaborate with Annette van Otterlo and Mariska van den Berg, and in my project Urbania, who have a social design lab for Staatslandbau. And we have to be very playful because we're working with such different groups of people, even within one day, like university students or children or people that don't read at all, or people that don't want to be seen and don't want to be mediated. We've been working on a project in the Schilderswijk where maybe four of the four people that wear burka in the Netherlands live, and we work with an organization, we collaborate, I should say, with an organization that works with isolated women, and who came to visit gardens where we will be flexible to an incredible degree. Like if you want the environment or the context this way, so that people can learn Dutch, fine. You want to study high school biology and use a public space orchard to do so, no problem. And in which the public space, just this public space, was considered too open and too public and too unprotected for people with whom we were going to collaborate. And it's very strange to go in one day from, I mean, this working on this research for this project really oddly prepared me, and maybe didn't, maybe it's something you can't be prepared for, to work with all those different, to go to a ministry and have to develop trust in and leverage and a sense of community on that level, and with a group of children.
So the project actually enabled you to speak many languages, and I don't mean English, Dutch, many social languages.
Yes. I just want to add something that is so funny, and it happens almost every week, that institutional partners or potential partners always ask us, how did you make contact? Yeah. I find that just the most crazy question.
And they ask that, like, in what?
They don't understand how we make contact with people in our projects, and when I almost don't know what to say, because the answer is we are simply present, and we just talk to people. And there's one image I like that entry, but it's one of the entries before in which you see. A neighborhood as I had just started to encounter it. Public space in progress. Down one more. There. And came upon this neighborhood where there was just this tremendous theater of carpets going on, and my real joy of just seeing this carpet installation in the public space, incredible agency, incredible social cohesion, which just made me so happy to just go and speak to total strangers, upon which this whole universe unfolded. And it was so easy and joyful. And it's just so funny that there are people in important positions wondering about how you connect to other people.
But it's also quite ironic that this project made you, you say this now, that actually the project made you very aware of the importance of offline contact, of just physical presence in a specific time, a specific place, just to be there in order to reach out. That brings us to the last artist, I think, present. There are more artists present, but they didn't take place on the benches, so I presume that means they want to remain invisible and just chat with you over drinks and dinner and share their experiences one-to-one and not through a microphone. And we also haven't met, which is a good way to close off the evening. We only met via a random email with a very big question of how this project might have altered your view on your own position as an artist, or maybe it didn't. I mean, it's also kind of a rhetorical question, because I think every step you take in working in a new way brings a slight alteration. So maybe the change it brought to you was minimal but significant.
That is definitely true. Everything you do changes your perspective on your own work, and that's why it's so interesting. I started doing research. I work with glass, and I've done so all my adult life. And exactly 13 years ago, I had a question by the Swedish Public Art Council. I am Swedish. To do something fun with normal window glass. And they knew my sculptures and that I work with solid glass, and I'm very interested in what happens when light go through the material glass. And I took the question very, very seriously and started for myself noting down all the techniques that I knew that were used in mostly manual glass production. And for myself decided and started making experiments, which ones of these techniques can actually be or are suitable for being translated into a larger scale, maybe even used in architecture. And my research was published in Sweden and traveled all the museums almost. And that led me to being an artist in residence in Paris for a year with a studio in the Marais with a salary to do research on my own. Because at the time, there was no possibility to conduct artistic research in Sweden, nor in Holland, and especially not in glass, because that is, as you all know, Kunstnäferheit. In Sweden, that's not the dirty word, by the way. There in Paris, I met artists from Australia, from England, from France, from Finland, from Great Britain, all over, who were actually there to as a part of their PhD in arts. That's why I was so happy with the introduction by Professor Kitty that she mentioned that finally in Holland, because when I met these people, I got so jealous. I thought, this is exactly what I want to do. This is where I am. This is my next step. And for me, it was not possible, not in Sweden, nor in Holland. And at the time, I had a small child, so I couldn't really go anywhere else. And so what I actually have done since then, the last past 13 years, is that I have funded my own research by selling off my test pieces. The pieces that I'm sort of done with, I transform into sculptures, sell in galleries, which is the stupidest idea you can think of, because I sell off my... Exactly, and they're lost. Well, they're not lost, because they're with some collector somewhere. Sometimes I know where they end up, sometimes I don't. So, can I make a wish? Can we have a Max Planck Institute for Arts, where you can actually do, for several years, you can do your research with a salary and a fixed budget, and that you actually know that you don't have to worry every day, how am I going to make ends meet, and keep doing fundraising, because that's basically what all of us, all artists, are doing all the time, to continue our practice as researchers, as we all are, as you said.
Thank you very much. And I think that's an excellent way to close off the evening with a kind of appeal, I mean, to nobody in particular, but to everybody out there. So tweet this massively. We need a Max Planck Institute in the Netherlands. And I think this book is actually probably the best argument for it, because I must admit that I personally was, I'm very skeptical about the notion of artistic research, because I not only presume, I know that all artists, most contemporary artists, have a research-based practice, and that this is an essential part of it. By academicizing it, you might make it sterile. But this book actually convinced me from the opposite, that it can be productive for artists who may not, might not venture that way automatically, that it can be a dynamic tool that you can actually share with the outside world, with a larger amount of people than just people who read PhDs or participate in presentations of PhD projects. It's getting extremely hot in here. I can see that people get red cheeks, start to wiggle on their chair. That's why I would like to close it off with an artistic contribution. First of all, with a big applause for Caroline and all of the artists for their massive effort. And two friends of Caroline actually decided to make this evening more than a discursive event, but to give it also a real artistic angle. And I would like to ask them to take the floor, briefly introduce themselves, and overwhelm us with their poetry and song before we all venture downstairs for mundane and banal things such as having drinks. Thank you all for being present, and big applause for the artists as well. Everything will speak for itself.
We apologize to the foreigners because we did not translate our poetry and songs. But as poetry is also music, please listen to the music. And some of the coolers. En dan lag het daar, op de koele plavage, een pak zwaartekracht, deze stapel bedrukt papier. Besnuffeld door haar hond, vluchtig aangeduid met haar tenen, wat hen samenbond over de lege dagen heen. wat niet af wilde komen met een laatste woord. De laatste wanhopige roffel van haar losgeslagen vinger op een toetsenbord dat voor dit alles geen geheugen had. Maar als een omkering wandelde het binnen, kuierend over het tegelpad. Vriendschap, een eerste woord. Het was ritselen en ruisen, strijken, strelen, zuchten, ademen, zoveel stemmen van bomen, bamboes, struiken, aangeraakt en betast door de wind. Gekwetter, geschater van vogels, echoend blaffen van honden, gekakel als een dagenlange naklank van de haan in de nacht. En een ijle hoorn ergens ver aan iemands mond gezet. Was het verleden tijd? Of een lang verborgen door eeuwen dwalen aan het zicht ontrokken toekomst die hier bloot lag? En die je nog niet met woorden als nu in bezit durft te nemen.
Ik ben niet de stem die dit zingt, ook niet de handen die deze snaren bespelen. Ik ben niet mijn naam, niet mijn achternaam. Niet wat ik wil en dat wat ik nogmaals zei. Ik ben niet dit verstoten voorgevoel, ook niet al die gesprekken achter mij. Oh, ik ben niet mijn verlangen, niet dit hopeloos gemis. Ik ben niet ooit of laat en dat wat niet meer is. Jij bent niet de angst om je vrijheid te verliezen.
blaadje schrap, blauw lipje, dik kopje oesters, aliekruiden, mossel, zeestem, paarden, anemoon, waaiergarnaal, gewipperde zwemkap.
Thank you.